folks and techniques that have been tried and true over the years, and it's just because we're not watching what we do the way we used to. First of all, you have to wear your name tag. When you come up to fly and you don't have your name tag, the check-in person is going to send you away. You can either get a duplicate name tag if you've lost it, or you can go back to your truck or car and pick it up. You can't fly without a name tag. Number two, check-in folks, run the check-in as we ask. Don't change it in the middle of the stream. If you have a request to change it to improve queue speed, we'll consider it. But I would rather have a slow queue than bad data. Number three, pad assignments. Personnel will verify that the NAR number on the card they're handed by check-in matches the NAR number on your name tag. Therefore, you must have your name tag. Number four, report to the main tent 15 minutes early. If I have an inexperienced person at check-in or at pad assignment, and the other guy, experienced person, hasn't shown up, I want to be able to float an experienced person into that position. Please report to the main tent 15 minutes before your shift. RSOs are announcing them as required. I will announce the first one. RSOs will cover them through the rest of the day. We need you there early so that we can help you get good data for your NARA. Thanks. With that, George has some election stuff he'd like to ask you to do.
Good evening, everyone. This is Mike George.
Oh, that's wrong.
Good evening, everyone. The time's come to conduct the...
No. We're not going to conduct the election.
Once again, we proved that the NAR runs as a well-oiled machine. After a brief interruption, I'm Mark Bundick. I'm the president of the National Association of Rock Tree, and I need to do a couple of administrative things here. First of all, I want to show a hands, and I'm not trying to embarrass anybody or anything. How many of you are here at your first NARA? Nobody. No rookies. Okay. Well, just as a reminder then for the protocol for what we're doing here, there are two events that are going to occur here tonight. The first one is a town hall meeting where the discussion is informal and open. And the second one will be an association meeting where the formal business of the NAR can be conducted, and you'll get an opportunity to vote in the election, which my colleague, Mr. Rocker, the secretary, is so anxious to conduct. Let's talk about the town hall meeting. Right? The association meeting is run under Robert's Rules of Orders with people making motions and so on and all that stuff. Okay. The town hall meeting is an informal session, and we only have a few rules, and it's to accommodate the shortcomings of your president. First of all, if you want to speak, raise your hand and let me know that you want to speak. And when you stand up to speak, tell us who you are and where you're from. I don't need to know your life history or how great your level 2 cert flight was. We can talk about that later. But if you just say something like, I'm Mark Bundick from Lakewood, Illinois, then everybody here thinks you, you may think everybody knows you, but maybe they don't. So just tell us who you are and where you're from. The president also has a USB port that's kind of like below 1.1. So the other rule that we have here is I'd like only one person to speak at a time. And with those two simple rules, if we can follow those, then this part of the meeting will go smoothly. I've been in enough public meetings to know that people don't like asking the first question or, you know, raising their hand first in class. So I've passed out two documents here to try to help you get over that initial shyness. One of them is a two-sided thing that looks like this. On one side, it's got a very complicated graph and a bunch of writing on the other side. It is a summary of the things that the NAR Board of Trustees, who held their meeting immediately prior to NARA, discussed. We met here for about 15 hours. All 9 board members were here. The other document that you have, and I'll talk about this a little later, is a raffle form, and I'll talk about the purpose of this raffle and why you should think about participating in it and helping us out a little bit financially, and at the same time have a shot at winning some pretty neat prizes. Everybody clear on what we're going to do here? Let's talk about the first page of this document with this fancy graph on it. What is that all about? And a bunch of numbers at the bottom. What are those all about? People often ask me, the first couple of questions they ask me about the NAR is, how many members do we have, how are we doing on membership, and how are we doing on money? The top two-thirds of this page are all about membership numbers. George Gassaway, who maintains our software at headquarters and is a former board member, put together this rather comprehensive graph that tells us a lot of things about what's going on with NAR membership numbers. It tells us things like how many members are members of sections, that's very important to us, how many people are high power certified, it tells us how many senior, leader, and junior members we have, it tells us how many family members we have, and it tells us about the number of NAR sections. If you look at this graph, what it is telling you is that the NAR over the past year or so has shrunk. We're losing members. If you look at the membership numbers that are listed down here, these are the numbers that drive the chart. You'll see them extending from November of 2000 until May of this year. Between June of last year and May of this year, we've lost over 300 members. Most of those look to be on the senior membership side. George doesn't know this yet, so he'll be both mortified and embarrassed when I say this, but I have a whole bunch of other statistics the NAR board wants him to pull from the database so that when he goes home, he'll have something to do other than build spiffy rockets.
Thanks.
Happy to help, George. So I'll also talk later on in this meeting about some other things we're doing to try to prime that membership pump. One thing that I notice, particularly because I see data that comes real-time from the NAR website, is that those of you who are running NAR sections, you are doing a very good job of recruiting new members to the NAR. You're the ones who are out there telling people how much fun you have flying rockets as an NAR member, and that is having a big effect. We see probably something in the neighborhood of 150 new members a year that are recruited directly by the sections. So whatever you guys are doing out there, keep it up. You're sending the right message, and people are getting excited and joining the NAR because of your work. Let's talk a little bit about money. Let me talk a little bit about how the NAR goes through its financial planning process. When the NAR board meets in the first part of the year, we try to establish a budget for the year. We look at financial history that's provided by Stu McNabb, the treasurer. We look at, we know about major projects that are coming down the pipe that may have expense impacts on us. We make projections about how big we expect the organization to be in terms of its number of members, so we estimate both the income and the expense and set a budget. This year, the budget that we set in Kenosha at Menardcon has a little bit of a deficit in it, and now here's time for confession. We don't like to sit down and actually nail this to the penny, guys. We're pretty close, probably within about 2 or 3% over the past couple of years, which I think is pretty darn good for an organization of our size. So even though we projected a budget deficit this year, we didn't really expect to have one. The noise in the numbers is going to make that be flat. We're trying to be flat on the year. If you look at what actually happened, the first column of numbers, our income is higher than we expected, much higher than we expected, and our expenses are about in line. So the surplus that you see down at the bottom of $25,600 and some odd is primarily because we've taken in more money than we projected. The bulk of that money, God bless you each and every one, was donations to the legal fund. So you're continuing to help us in our fight against the illegal regulation that the ATF is imposing on us by contributing to that. And in the meantime, the dues income, the other income of the association, and our expenses are tracking pretty well in line with where we are. So organizational smaller, but money-wise, we're doing okay. Are there specific things about either these membership numbers or the financials that I could answer questions about? And we can come back to those if you think of them later.
Hey, buddy, Steve Humphrey. Have you talked to Tripoli folks about their analysis of these numbers?
On these numbers?
Well, not these numbers, but do they have a similar kind of track up there?
I have no idea.
I have a quick question.
Who are you and where are you from?
I'm sorry. Chris Taylor from Levittown, Pennsylvania. I don't know the details of what these numbers mean, but it seems like you guys are spending an awful lot of money on postage and DSL and phone. Is there any way the membership could help offset that?
No, I don't think so. I mean, our postage, you know, every time we mail something from headquarters, obviously we have to spend money to do that. Every time we mail you a model rocketeer, every time we mail you a magazine, postage is a big part of our expense. It's factored into the cost of membership. We factor it in when we set the dues, and we track it as it comes down the pipe. We try to keep track of when the Postal Service is getting ready to give us a rate increase, and we get advance notice of those from Todd Schleim, our printer, who actually does the physical process of mailing the magazine side. So I think we have this well budgeted and well prepared for on the income side. I don't think there's anything extraordinary we need to do.
So they're normal numbers?
Yeah, these are pretty normal numbers.
Funny, sorry, I didn't mean the money number, I meant the membership number.
I have no knowledge of either set of numbers from Tripoli.
Jack Haggerty, Livermore, California. I assume the big jump in the printing costs was going back to color on the magazine? That's a fairly sizable bump.
Yes, there is also a piece of noise that this is kind of a detail that the NAR board is aware of, and I'll make you aware of. That number, that's the printing number there, included the May-June issue of the magazine, but the budget is done on a monthly basis. So there's a piece of the budget. It's not, we don't chunk the budget in two months for the magazine and 1 month for everything else, Jack. So the budget's going to catch up with the magazine in June. And normally, when I come to this meeting, we would have run the numbers for June, but this time we didn't.
Okay.
There's nothing sacred about looping back around to this. If we need to loop back around to any of these numbers, we can do that. If you turn over on the back, now we've got a whole bunch of specific topics that we talked about, and I'm going to confuse you a lot by going out of order. I want to call on Trip Barber, the NAR Vice President, to talk about some things that are going on in national events, particularly the Team America Rocketry Challenge. So, Trip, if you have... Okay, thanks.
I'm Trip Barber, the Vice President. I'm from Springfield, Virginia. I'm the Chairman of the National Events Committee, and National Events Committee also encompasses the Team America Rocketry Challenge. I'd like to be able to stand up here and say that we have awarded all of next year's national events, but that's not true. We've awarded NARCON. It'll return to Kenosha in March. They've been doing a great job and are up for one more. I have three bids promised but none yet received for NSL, and I have no bids promised or received yet for NARM. I'm working on some people. And as soon as those are received, as soon as I get bids in, I'll announce the selection. I've told the people who are interested in NSL that I need their bids soon, and my goal is to announce NSL's location by Labor Day. NARM, I need a volunteer for NARM. I'm working on a couple people, but we do need people to step forward each year. People always want to do NARM year after next. That was my 2 years to think about it, so I need somebody for next year. I got plenty of people who want to do it in a couple of years. I really wanted to talk for a minute, though, about the biggest event we run, which is not NARM and not NSL, but the Team America Rocketry Challenge. As you know, we're partners in that with the Aerospace Industries Association, which is the trade group for all of the major aerospace companies. And through that, we're partnered with the aerospace companies. And in TARC 2006, which opens on September 7th, there are 39 aerospace companies. All the big ones are signed up as partners, financial sponsors. NASA is a sponsor with us and with the AIA. The Department of Defense has signed up as a sponsor. And the educational sponsor for TARC 2005 is the American Association of Physics Teachers. For 2006, it'll be the Civil Air Patrol.
Cool.
So we're traveling in good company with the Team America Rocketry Challenge. This is a well-funded event. There's a lot of money on the table from all these sponsors, certainly not from the NAR. That's not what we add. What we add is youth. and I really appreciate all the NAR members around the United States do to make Team America work. And it isn't your money, it's your heart. It's what you're doing with the kids at the local level that is completely irreplaceable. There is nothing that could buy that service, and Team America Rocketry Challenge would not work without it. Most of these kids don't know how to do rockets, but they're smart, they want to learn. The reason we're doing Team America Rocketry Challenge is, yeah, to get kids into rocketry, but more than that, the reason we have all these partners is to get kids interested in aerospace sciences so that they'll pursue a career in aerospace and replace the generation that entered the aerospace industry with the space program and is now reaching retirement age. The industry is very, very alarmed at the aging of their workforce. Kids are not choosing to go into aerospace, and Team America is one of several initiatives and one of the most successful in convincing young people to pick aerospace as a career. That's why we have so much support. So by your efforts at the local level, working with teams, showing kids how to do rocketry, and providing launch support, that is, access to your launch site, sometimes at some considerable inconvenience to yourselves, or like in February when it's just plain miserable, it really, really makes a difference. We are truly inspiring these young people to consider aerospace as a career, and we've got information from the first couple of years at TARC that they really are going to college and studying this stuff, and they're changing their minds about what they're going to study in college because they find this exciting. So we're really contributing to the entire American society by what we do. And I want to thank all of you for what you have done to make that work by your actions at the local level. You're all paying forward to the next generation of America, not just rocketeers, but real rocket scientists. Your services are irreplaceable. It's our value added to TARC, and it's through the NAR that we're doing that. I continue to need more mentors at the local level, and if any of you here are not currently signed up but would like to be signed up, you will be posted on a list that's an access, a resource list that's made available to the teams. And if there's a team in your local area, they'll call you if you're on the list, and they'll ask for advice, help, whatever. Usually too late. I mean, usually they're, like, procrastinating, and it's a panic, and, you know, they're kids. They're high school kids. Just be patient. Get over it. Help them out as much as you can, and help them get something in the air. TARC 2006's rules are a little bit different. We had it was just too hard and too expensive for the kids to do two-stage, particularly with the bottom stage almost always being a cluster of multiple D-12s. There were some safety issues, and when I looked at the price tag that the teams were having to pay for rocket supplies for all their test flights, it was, on the average, well over $500 for the successful teams. That's too much.
Wow.
So we simplified the rocket part of it a little bit this year by not requiring two stages and made the flight objective harder in compensation. The flight objective for TARC 2006 is a precise altitude of 800 feet and a precise duration of 45 seconds, both. So the flight challenge, I think, is just as hard. The overall challenge is just as hard, but the rocket part is a little easier and cheaper, and the flight dynamics part is a little harder. We'll be issuing them SpaceCAD software this year, along with altimeters. So I want to thank all of you, and if any of you are not signed up as mentors and would like to be one after the meeting, just catch me and give me your name and email address, and I'll put you on the list. With that, I'll deal with any questions about national events real quickly, then sit down. Sir?
If we signed up as a mentor last year,
who are you? Where are you from?
Oh, Rick Taylor, Cincinnati, Ohio.
If you're signed up previously, you don't need to sign up again. I'll send out a notice to all the already signed up mentors in early September saying, if you haven't got them already, here are the rules. I have sent the rules out to all the mentors, but I'll send out complete information on being a mentor. And once again, if you change your email address and you're a mentor, please let me know so that the emails get to you. But you don't have to sign up again if you're already signed up. Jack.
I'm still Jack Haggard.
Right.
Is it still dual leg law?
No, single leg.
Single leg.
Yeah, with one stage, one motor, I thought about that and said, you know, better make it one egg.
Okay.
Sorry, I should have mentioned that as the other rule change. Yes?
Roy Green, Atlanta. We've had a lot of problems with a bunch of teams coming up to us in March.
Right.
Or
I know.
April. Is there any way to really emphasize to these people that they need to get a test of this?
No. None that works that I've been able to discern. We barrage them with emails from TARC headquarters. We send them, here's a schedule. This is where you should be. Week by week, you should have done this, then this, then this, and they blow it off.
Could there be like a maybe an early not an early an early milestone that they need to do that to get them in touch with us beforehand. Like maybe get something in the air by December and get in touch with your local government section or whatever.
Can't do it. This is about getting kids involved somehow or other, and unfortunately, the good ones, the ones that make it to the finals, almost always start early, and we tell each year's new crop, okay, the people who succeeded last year started early. If you don't start early, you're probably not going to succeed. Start early.
Right.
And some of them do, and the rest of them fail.
Yeah, it's just that when they all come up to us in March.
I know.
That's too late.
I know the feeling. I'm from Novar, and we've probably had 35 teams in the D.C. area that we support, and you know, some of them are real good, and they have. What's really exciting about this is that in the good schools, they've built a culture where they have just every year it's a machine, and they understand that there's committed teachers. They have institutionalized rocketry. Think about that as part of high school, advanced kinds of rocketry. So there are quite a number of schools around the U.S. where it's institutionalized, and those schools do start early. It's the new ones that come in that, you know, have to learn the hard way, I'm afraid. And if they like it, if they have a positive experience, they will do better the next year. They will start early. They will have learned it. So if we run them away the first year, they'll probably not come back, and that's counterproductive to us. I've learned a lot about all the school systems in the U.S. and about teenagers and so forth by trying to run this nationwide event. You just have to kind of accept that they are what they are. Steve?
Chip, is the communication about this and getting them to stay on schedule the teachers or to the students?
To both. We've learned over the course that we have to get a student, team captain, and an assistant. So we have two students and the main teacher or adult supervisor. Remember that you don't have to be from a school to be in TARC. You have to be a student in 7th through 12th grade, but the teams can be from Boy Scouts, Civil Air Patrol, 4-H, anything except NAR, Tripoli, or another rocketry organization. The winning team this year was from a 4-H Federation in Minnesota. So we do have two adults and two students that we directly broadcast to. And, you know, these kids are committed kids, but they're committed to many things. They're in robotics competitions. They have finals. They have their lives are incredibly overscheduled and busy. And so they only have windows of time where they focus on things. And we're not in their food chain, typically, if they have other events. We don't get in their food chain until after winter exams, which in most schools around January, you know. So after that, typically they wake up and start focusing on it. So if we established a checkpoint before then, they'd all fail. Okay, I've used up enough of my time. One more. Jim Fliss.
Yes, Jim Fliss, Merrimack, New Hampshire. I just wanted to ask, with the way TARC is set up and we established the type of student, the number of students that can be in the team and the adults that are required, is not a mentor required, or can we not make that a requirement? So that it's just another one of the steps that they have to take as a
no,
registration.
Can't. Unfortunately, there are places where there are plenty of mentors mapped out with the schools, but there's plenty of other places where we have no mentor at all in entire states. And in fact, in entire regions of the United States, we have like one mentor across five states. And it would be
the other thing I'd just like to ask is to be proactive from our direction out.
Right.
Can we inform all of the registered mentors of the schools in their region, in their area?
Yeah, I do that. I transmit a list of all the schools and all the contact information for the teachers and students at those schools to all the people who are on my mentor list. And I ask them to make contact, but then they tell me, oh, I call all these teachers and my phone calls didn't get returned. And about a third of the teams get a qualification flight in. I wish it were higher than that, but that's just sort of a fact of life. And
it's a pretty good percentage.
It's pretty good. Yeah, and a third of them make it to the finals, and those kids are really good. If you haven't been to the finals, I also need range crew for the finals. It takes 90 NAR members to run the finals. I have the all-star team of the NAR there running the finals, and anybody who does it gets one of these shirts for free. So I'm always looking for range crew volunteers. Okay. Maybe I didn't know you were coming. Or
where's my shirt?
Okay. Other than that screw up, I'm doing my best. Okay, thanks.
Thanks, Tripp. If I could just echo those comments, I've told people after the first year we did TARC, I said, I think this thing's going to turn into the maybe the only, but was certainly one of the best perks of being NAR president, is the opportunity to go there and see these kids. It is the most amazing rocket event I have ever seen in my life. You know, and to speak to the range crew, you know, even if you don't have an opportunity to mentor a team, if you want to get on the range crew, the clockwork precision and the professionalism of this range crew is amazing. The first year, Tripp and his team had to battle the elements. It rained like mad there. The ceilings were low. The schedule had to get shifted. And towards the end of the day, when all these flights had gone off like clockwork, Vance Coleman, who was the chairman of Lockheed Martin at the time, turned to John Douglas, the president and CEO of the AIA, and said, I don't think we could run a rocket range this well. You know, how do they do it? And I said, well, they don't know Tripp Barber. Let's turn our attention now back to the other parts of the NAR board meeting. One of the things I try to do is solicit member needs and concerns for the board meeting. So a couple of months, maybe a little sooner, I go out to my electronic communications channels and I ask members to give me input for items that they want to put on the agenda. Some of those turn out to be questions about current NAR policy or, you know, a program that's going on, and we funnel those into the right committee and try to get that person taken care of. But when we have a new topic, I always put these on the agenda, and I try to take care of them at the start of the meeting. After we do administrative work, before we do finances, before we do membership, before we do whatever our big topic of the meeting is, I want the member needs and concerns addressed. So I put this information, whatever you send me, I put on the agenda for the NAR board to read. So if you have stuff in the future, don't be afraid to send me that stuff and get it on the agenda. Let's talk about some of the things that we got requests about. The first item on this list, allowing delay modification by level one certified members. I got this item almost as soon as I issued the call for information about what do you want on the agenda. And I think this problem has sort of been taken away from us. At the time that the member sent this in, Aerotech had not made its announcement about it being permissible to modify their delays. They have since done that, and all manufacturers of motors now provide you opportunity and instruction about how to modify those delays. As long as the manufacturer has that as a recommended practice, it's perfectly acceptable for you to do that, and you don't need level one, level two, level three, whatever certification to do it. So if the manufacturer's recommending it, there are instructions in there about telling you how to do it, it's okay. We get often questions about motor decertification procedures, and this has bounced around in a couple of different contexts over the past couple of years. In this case, people are wondering why these certifications expire. The principal reason that's done is through an NFPA rule that is in document 1125. NFPA 1125 contains the standards for the manufacture of model rocket motors. There's language in that code that specifies how those motors are to be, what the motor manufacturer certifies as their usability over time. And you can do this in one of two ways. If you put a date code on the motor, then the motor is supposed to have at least a 10-year shelf life. If no date code is on the motor, then that shelf life shrinks to 5 years. So our decertification of these motors is based in principle in this rule. It says, this is the NFPA code relative to the date life of the motors. So we are bound by that code because we are a voting member of the NFPA. And so our decertification of these motors is tracking to that NFPA standard.
Chris from Levittown, then how come our decertification problems bear no resemblance to that code whatsoever? We can legally fly motors 30 years old, and safety certification expires for 3 years.
And those motors are retested on a periodic basis in order to ensure
that... But that motor...
I understand. There's also... The NAR board has also got an additional concern here that's relative to our liability around these, right? When these motors go out of production, if we continue to certify them, we are the only entity standing in the liability chain. Then the manufacturer's going to point to this code to say, I don't bear responsibility for these that were certified to this standard.
Why not five instead of three?
We're working on changing that. You got to speak up, man, because I'm never going to see you.
If there's no date code on it, how do we know when the 5 years is up?
when they go out of production, remember, we're retesting these things, right?
Well,
okay. Right.
So it's the end of production.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the end of production. All right. We have some questions about the hybrid motor ignition method and whether or not modelers could use methods outside of, that apparently, I confess, I'm not a hybrid motor expert. I sort of know how these things work, but I know there are multiple systems out there for doing these motors and how they're set up and what methods they use to get everything in the right place at the right time for the motor to work. And I'm sort of blissfully ignorant about those technical details. So this question didn't make very much sense to me, but it made a lot of sense to John Lingow and others on the board who are more conversant with this technology. Again, same story here. If the manufacturer has recommended methods for ignition, those are the ones that you should follow and use. Right? So you need to check with manufacturers if you have questions about what the right way to ignite these hybrid motors are. This next item, I confess, is mislabeled, and that's a presidential error. It says complex rocket used for level one certification. And the real question is, what does the certification rules, once you're certified to fly a high power rocket in a particular class, what does it say about the total impulse you can fly? When you have a level one certified flyer, your limit is 640 newton seconds. You can't take two I motors and put them together if you have a level one certification and fly that rocket. That rule is congruent currently with our friends in the Canadian Association of Rocketry, the CAR, and the United Kingdom Rocketry Association, the UKRA. It looks like it might be out of sync with our friends in Tripoli, and one of my follow-on tasks from this meeting is to go and have a conversation with Ken Good about this subject. We're trying to make sure that everybody stays in sync, right? If the rule says 640 newton seconds, everybody knows that 640 newton seconds is total impulse for level one certification, not that you're certified to use I motors. Okay? So I have a follow-up task to lock this down. But we believe that's the answer. Okay, we had a question about a member who came in and said, I've been out of the loop for a while, and I suddenly noticed that there are these metal fin cans on the market. And I see this language in the code that I had either forgotten about or was unaware about, that the high power safety code says you can use the minimal amount of ductile metal in your rocket. How many of you were familiar with that language in that code? Okay, very good. So he's saying, well, you know, it's like, this really good idea for me. I mean, as a practical matter, and we can speak more about this offline, the total energy that's present in a rocket like this, it doesn't really matter whether your fins are made out of plywood or G10 or metal. You know, the total energy and how it's going to act on something is the same. The metal represents no increase in the relative risk. And to the extent that it enhances the safety of your rocket if you think you need it, it's probably a good thing, rather than shedding your fins off because you couldn't use it. That line of reasoning and discussion went on when we revised the high power safety code and created it, and there was an extensive debate, as I recall, about that subject before we said, yeah, metal's okay because the relative risk of the flight is improved by keeping your fins on instead of having them come off because they weren't made of metal. Okay. One of the big issues that's been kicking around, and I know this subject has made the rounds in multiple electronic fora, is the question of whether or not you can use what I would broadly class as an odd rock in order to do your high power certification. Can you fly a flying saucer? Can you fly a monocopter? Can you fly something else that doesn't...
An 11-foot glider.
The NAR board spent a lot of time talking about this, and the principle that I think is key to understanding where we landed on this issue is the important skill that we think you need to demonstrate when you certify level one, level two rockets is active recovery. You need to deploy an active recovery system to bring your model back safely. And models that don't do that and don't rely on you designing for that are not what high power certification is all about. Now, I know also this is another follow-up task for me because I know that the Tripoli board met on this issue at their meeting at LDRS and wanted to see what our thinking was on this before they made a decision about it. So I have a follow-up task to go back to Ken Good, and he and I talked about this before I came to the meeting, and he wasn't sure what his board was going to decide to do. We talked about some of the issues. I outlined for him at the time, we had this conversation probably a week and a half ago, Ken, I think active recovery is an important principle of doing high power certification and make sure we have safe high power flyers. So I have to go back and lock this down with him. I don't know that he took any straw votes or where his board has landed on this, but I hope, again, we're going to strive to maintain synchronization across all of our organizations, and I hope people recognize that active recovery is an important part of doing your high power certification. Yes, Chris.
Chris Levittown, how can the user stay in the loop on this? Because this is a very touchy and important subject to me, because I only like to fly Odd Rocks.
Okay. Again, if you decide to get your high power certification with a regular rocket and then go fly Odd Rocks, knock yourself out, right? We're saying in order for you to get that high power certification, though, we want you to demonstrate an understanding and execution of active recovery.
Okay. So is there going to be like some strict only parachutes, or is this going to be a case-by-case basis?
It's an active recovery. We want something that could change actively about the configuration of the model, and Sports Services Committee will be the one who will be tasked after this when we say that. When we say that as policy to them, they're charged with the implementation of it, which means that Carl Talanco and John Lingau, who is his trustee liaison, will work together on the appropriate language for this. And I'm glad you mentioned this, what's going to happen next, because this is the example of how, at least I'm trying to organize the NAR's work here. That is, the board is setting a policy that says, we want to see active recovery of high-power rockets in order for certification criteria. You guys in support services who are charged with creating the system and administering it, you go take care of the details. Embody the principle of active recovery. John, as the board liaison, would report back to me and to the rest of the board members about, well, here's what how we've chosen to implement this. And if the board didn't think that was adequate, we'd stand up and say, hey, wait a minute, that's not where we want it to go. That's how committee and board organizations should work. The committees actually have to do the work. Sorry about that, Carl. But we make the policy, get active recovery,
so
being explicit in the certification criteria.
So
if you have specific questions about the language, then you need to take it up with Carl and John.
Right. So we can be involved with it?
Anybody's welcome to give input to NAR committees at any time. You don't need my permission or active support in order to do that. Tell them.
Jim Fliss, New Hampshire. And just a clarification, because while I'm not involved in high power myself, I've discussed this with many people in the past. As I understand what you just said, the intent here is that we have active recovery.
Correct.
The intent is not to avoid the use of Odd Rocks for certification. In other words, if I have a flying saucer model that employs active recovery, it would be suitable for certification flights.
Again, I think you need to talk to Carl and to John about the specifics of this, right? I can envision systems where people would do that, right? Suppose somebody comes up with a system that just pops out a parachute on a saucer. Sounds like active recovery to me, right? But I'm an ex-Pink Book lawyer, and I don't prefer to get into the debate about the specifics of that. And I hope that people will look at this and say, you know, he's right. Active recovery is an important thing that I should learn as a high-power rocketry skill, certainly a good thing to learn as a model rocket skill, and that will sort of make sense.
Absolutely, but the definition of active recovery is the important
thing. And again, so now your input is to John and Carl, go sort out and, you know, see where that takes you. And if you're not happy with that, and you go, that's a bunch of hooey, right? We have another board meeting in the Narcon in Kenosha in March. You can send me a letter to say, hey, you guys are really screwed up about this. Here's why this rule is wrong. And one of the member needs and concerns this, and we will do something about it. Which might be to say, no, you're wrong, and we're right, but you will get a hearing on if you are dissatisfied with the result. Fair enough? Okay. This is my favorite member need and concern. And there's a sneaky reason why. We had somebody come in and said, hey, you know, there's a lot of the NAR's history that is disappearing. We need a NARM historian, somebody who will write the history of NARM, you know, who the champions were and what the events and all this. And I said, great, that's a great idea. So now guess what? We're hunting for a volunteer. I need a volunteer who wants to do some history work, right?
Tom Lyon, Richmond, for this contest. board chairman. Mark Belewski has volunteered today. And we would like to establish that. Establish Bruce as the historian.
Knock yourself out. He's working for you. That is perfect. That's great.
He's great. First place in a lot of those years.
He's an excellent writer here, certainly. That's great. Bob, I can tell.
Bob Kaplow, Dundee, Illinois. Is there a reason this historian should be limited to just what went on at Narum?
What are you thinking?
No. I'm thinking that
everything north
association than just Narum, and an NAR historian might be a more appropriate position.
The request came in specifically around the Narum. I am hoping that my good friend Tom Lyon, whose job I used to have, and whom I have great sympathy for, by the way, will talk to Bruce about expanding that and maintaining more competition history as opposed to specifically Narum history, right? An NAR historian is not specifically directed to contest history per se. There's a lot more history to the NAR than that. And again, if somebody's interested in doing that work, I'm more than interested in talking to them about it for reasons that I will talk about here very shortly. But that I see those roles as two different things because, in my opinion, and I've been on both sides of the street, the competition history of the organization is very different than the other history of the organization. So if you can find me a volunteer or want to talk about it, I'm up for that. Okay. Marketing effort via manufacturers. We had a manufacturer come to us and said, say, you know, I got some room in the starter kit boxes that I'm putting out on the street, and I'd sure like to get copies of Sport Rock Tree magazine to put in them. I got this request from an NAR trustee who had this conversation with the manufacturer. I said, well, you know, Sport Rock Tree is kind of an expensive promotional piece to put in there, but I have something better. About a year and a half ago, we created what I know as a trifold brochure. It's a brochure that's a piece of paper that's folded up, so that you unfold it. It's got three panels on it. Full-color brochure, talks about the benefits of being the NAR member, talks about the cost, tells where you can go to the website, or you can just send the form in to headquarters. After we used all those forms up, Marie Stumpy her husband had moved already into Iowa, and I said, well, when you get ready to move, we'll reprint them. And the housing market apparently in Altoona, Wisconsin, was not as good as it is in some other parts of the country, and it took them 10 months to sell the house. So now that they're in Iowa, I'm getting ready to reprint these. And so anybody here who's from a manufacturing organization of rocket products, if you want to promote the NAR, you need to come see me and tell me that you want to do that. I will get you trifold brochures, and if you put them in your products and want to distribute them, we'll try to make sure that you continue to get supplied by those. And how many of you have seen that trifold brochure? I'm pretty proud of this piece, right? You know, it's a good color, it's got a good description of benefits, all the contact information. Now that we've moved, I can update that thing and get that printed right back out. So if you're wandering around Bender Row, you might encourage your manufacturing friends to come see me and get on that food chain, because it's one of the top things I have to do when I get back home.
Steve, how can the sections get all the more than the brochure points you
get? I'll reprint those two, right? And I'll make an announcement to the section list that they're available from headquarters. You want some sent out, too?
I'm still Bob.
Yes.
You're still Bob.
Sorry about that. Is that document something that you can put on the NAR website in PDF format?
It's on the section website. I don't recall whether or not I uploaded it. It might be at the NAR website. I'd have to go check. And they're all in PDF. And I have two versions of the PDF. I have a black and white version and a color version. So those of you in NAR sections, if you want a promotional piece to use while you're waiting for this one, you can go into the section, files section on the Yahoo group and get that thing and print it out and Xerox it and distribute it in the meantime if you want.
Mm-hmm.
mean, how about the sections that already have the trifold brochure that we already give out at our club launches? We already have a stackable.
Keep using them. The mail from headquarters is being forwarded, and it's being forwarded right now by a service. There's an online service in Altoona who's actually going to the post office and getting that mail and sending it to Marie on a periodic basis. After we've done that for a year, then we're going to have the post office start doing the forwarding. So those brochures, if you use them, rest assured that even if they go to Altoona, they'll end up in Marie's hands. NAR flag. Jennifer Ash Poole had asked us to consider the creation of an NAR flag, and we said, great idea. Just like Bruce, we gave her the job. She was going to run
that. Come talk to me.
Come talk to her if you have ideas about the NAR flag. Ted Cockins agreed to go out and have a looky-see about whether or not a commercial quote or whether Jennifer might be able to arm twist some volunteers or, you know, get some cross work done or whatever to create an NAR flag that would be used at the TARC and the NARM and the NSL and other events, the fly on our range. Oh, this next item is the one that made me the happiest that, among member needs and concerns at the NAR board meeting. Some of you are probably aware that we give out two kinds of scholarships in the NAR. One is really kind of a teacher grant thing where we look for educators who are using Rocktree in classrooms. They fill out an application and they apply for a grant. We have a committee that looks over those grant applications and awards the teacher $500 to use in their classroom for Rocktree activities. And we try to give those out on an annual basis. We also do that for NAR members who are pursuing college education, post high school education, whether it's a technical school, community college, 4-year college, doesn't make any difference. Have to be NAR members. We ask them to fill out an application, tell us about their activities, get their recommendations from faculty members in their high school, and give them scholarship money. Well, Jim Fliss of Flisskits came to Stu McNabb and said, I want to be a part of this program, and has given us an additional $500 this year. So now we've been giving out these $500, we can give another scholarship this year because of Jim's generosity. Jim, thank you very much. Any of the others of you who want to make donations in that vein, okay, and you know, Jim's been very generous and given $500. There's nothing to say that we can't use a $250 scholarship to help some kid buy his books for a semester or a quarter. So, you know, NAR sections, you wanted to get involved in this, individuals, other companies, you know, the more money that we have, the more that we can give to deserving kids who are working on an education. So. Who are you and where are you from, sir?
Stu McNabb, Hubert, North Carolina. I kind of run the scholarship awards committee, and I want you to be aware of something that a lot of you, I don't think, know. The NARM auction funds money for the Academy Awards, for the Teacher Awards. But the scholarship money is coming directly from our general funds, so we're not, you know, having any auctions or raffles or anything like that. So just be aware that one of the two sources of money is coming in.
Right, and if you look on your figures on the front page, you'll see, you know, all under awards and trophies, right, there's the $5,000 that we have dumped in there for that activity. Right, Sue?
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, we are doing this. It is helping kids go to college. It is putting us on the map of radar screens of teachers who are getting scholarship money for their kids. So. Junior member kit proposal. It's just like Manufacturers Row out there on the range. Carl Lockhorn of Semrox has come to us and said, I'd like to make sure that every junior member who joins the NAR gets a free kit from my company. So Carl and I spent time today on the range about setting up the mechanics of that now that headquarters has moved. Okay. A couple other things that he and I talked about was if other manufacturers want to do this, I'm prepared to give you the information that you need to get product into the hands of junior NAR members, or, to make it even simpler, you can talk to Carl about sharing the fulfillment process and the mechanics of getting on board his bus, so to speak, and making it easier so the kid's going to get one package with multiple vendor product in it. So if there are other manufacturers who want to participate in this kind of program, they need to come to me, talk to Carl, we'll figure out a way to make that all happen. So I hope to deploy that stuff probably in the next 60 days out of headquarters, again, depending on some mechanics I have to set up there. The last request we had from a member who pointed out to us that, how many of you are familiar with the XPRIZE? This organization, now having fulfilled its primary mission of rewarding the first people to space twice in a two-week period, the $10 million prize, has decided they want to keep doing this. And again, they're modeling this on the early days of aviation. They're going out and they've set up a competition slash fly-in slash exhibition that they're going to do in Arizona. This member said, you know, this is something that looks like the NAR should get involved in it. You know, well, why don't we think about doing this? They're running some contests for high school kids. Maybe we should think about getting on board with this. First of all, this is a good idea. More exposures preferred to less. Okay. Problem is twofold. One, there aren't enough details yet for me to make an informed decision or the board to make a decision about how this process works. We need to know more specifics about how organizations become sponsors, what does it cost, how much commitment do we have to make to the organization. The second thing is that I think in the universe of good ideas, we're stretched pretty well thin right now with the TARC and the other educational outreach that I'll talk about in a minute that we're getting ready to do with other organizations. And I'm not sure how we implement this. I point this out for a couple of reasons. One, members are disappointed when I have to tell them no, but one of the things I've learned in not-for-profit management is unless you focus your resources carefully, you can do lots and lots and lots of good things and not really get anything done. Unless we can find some way to get more resources to get projects like XPRIZE, or we could go up to the EAA convention, we may return to the NCASE convention that's sponsored by the CAP at some point. We've got to figure out how to make those things operational and deploy resources to them, either money or time or talent. And it's very difficult for us to do that right now, given where we are with everything else we got on our plate. So I would encourage you, as you see these opportunities, don't stop sending them in. Remember that the Team America thing that we're so involved in right now and has been such a great success started with one phone call from the AIA to me without any understanding what it was going to take to do it or whether or not we could make it work. So don't stop sending me ideas. Those are the member needs and concerns that we had on the agenda. We also had some kind of holdover items from past meetings. We've done some discussion around the next set of items that I'll talk about. One of them was the idea of pretty soon we're going to be 50 years old, dead in middle age, just like me. the idea is we want to celebrate that anniversary, and we want to celebrate that history. And the idea that we've come up with is paying forward and looking back. And we talked about some ideas about how we can make that happen. And we're actually trying to tie it in to some of the things I will talk about under the heading of Partnerships for the Future, Part 2. The bulk of the NAR board meeting's work in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was around the idea of establishing partnerships. Team America works because our skill sets with the AIA are perfectly complementary. There's virtually no overlap in our skill sets. And we've developed a partnership of trust with that organization. We're wondering whether or not that model can work for other organizations. So we've had discussions with the CAP about extending that relationship. We're in the process of negotiating with them. They are due to send us a draft of a memorandum of understanding that would discuss how the two organizations would interact. That's the way they do business. It's not unusual for not-for-profits to do business in that way when they go into partnerships. And we'll see what they send back and try to work it out. We'll be exchanging materials, we'll be exchanging contacts, we'll be putting things in each other's publications and so on. I think that's the nature of that relationship. We're also trying to figure out how to establish a closer relationship with 4-H. As Tripp mentioned, the team that won the TARC this year was a 4-H school from Minnesota. We will try to figure out whether there's some way, how many of you judge 4-H rocketry contest here? Familiar with those? Maybe there's some way we can tie in closer to that organization. They touch 4 million kids a year. That's a lot of potential rocketeers out there that would be really smart for us to get connected to. One way that we...
I just wanted to highlight one thing about 4-H that amazed me that I have discovered over the last couple of years. is the level of their rocketry program. You think 4-H and you think cattle, sheep, and a horse show. They have one of the most sophisticated rocketry programs for their youth that I've seen, and have been contacted many times because part of their requirement as you advance through the levels is they must build what 4-H defines a true skill level 4 rocket. And when they came to discuss with me whether our skill level 4 rocket really was, they were quite serious about their need and specific on what the kid had provided. They do have to, in fact, build a skill level 4. I'm not even aware of such a program for Boy Scouts or the Civil Air Patrol that goes to the level that the 4-H goes, and we need to support them.
Right. So how would this work, and what am I thinking about relative to the 50th anniversary celebration? How many of you here are familiar with a program that is run by the Experimental Aircraft Association called Young Eagles? Okay. Here's what these guys did. They said, you know what, and they started this 10 or 12 years ago. They said, we want to fly a million kids their first airplane flight by the Wright Brothers anniversary, December 17, 2003. And that's what we're going to do. And everybody in the aviation community, the rest of them, said, you people are nuts. You'll never be able to do that, right? I think they flew 80,000 kids the first year and 160,000 and so on, right? They flew a million kids, and they did it 3 months before the date, right? And now the stories are coming back in with them saying, oh, here's a kid who got his first ride as a young eagle back there, and now he's a commercial pilot, or he's an aircraft mechanic, or he's building his own airplane. I mean, that's what these kids have gone on to do. I think as part of our 50th anniversary celebration, we need to set a goal to say, we're going to have kids fly their first rocket, X number of them, by the 50th anniversary of the NAR in 2007. How would I like to make that happen? I'd like to make that happen by partnering with a manufacturer who's going to be here later in the week to say, I want you to put together a packet of materials for NAR sections that has kits and engines in it that we can drop ship to an NAR section. When they get ready to talk to Boy Scouts, 4-H group, CAP squadron, and get ready to fly their first rocket, we can put that package in front of you. You can have those kids build and fly that rocket as part of our 50th anniversary